Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Genesis, and we'll be continuing today with part one of Back to Bethel. So let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 34, verse 1, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Jacob has returned to the land of Canaan, and he's come into the area of Shechem. And so when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this young woman as a wife." And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. So back in the land, and just shortly after their arrival, this unfortunate incident occurs with Jacob's daughter, Dinah. Then Hamor, verse 6, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. It's interesting that even in that time, it was very clear that this was disgraceful behavior. Fornication is essentially what we're dealing with here, and to some degree, you know, it sounds a little bit like it was sort of what we would maybe refer to today as kind of a date rape situation. But on the other hand, the young man Shechem was honorable in that he wanted to marry this young woman. But it was a disgraceful thing. You know, it's interesting. Today, it seems that there are people that want to remove any shame or disgrace from any kind of sexual activity, behavior, or whatever the case might be. And that is becoming more and more the mentality in our culture today. You know, there was a time when to commit adultery was a disgraceful thing. And anyone who did that, and when that was, you know, publicly found out, that person was shamed. But then, you know, things sort of changing as time passes, and through a lot of different influences, adultery became somewhat fashionable. And they no longer would refer to it as adultery, but they would refer to it as an affair. Implication there, something romantic, something sort of exciting, something adventurous, taking away the sin element, really. And we've seen that in so many different things. Fornication. There was a time when it was disgraceful to live in sin. That's what it was referred to. Oh, they're living in sin. Nobody wanted to be identified as a person who was living in sin. That was a disgraceful thing, to live in sin. But of course, today that's all changed. In the minds of many people, there's no such thing as living in sin anymore. And in the minds of some people, you absolutely ought to live together. You ought to have sex together before you get married. Of course, you want to make sure you're compatible and all of that sort of thing. Of course, we could include in all of that homosexuality. It wasn't all that long ago, and that was a disgraceful thing. It was a shameful thing. And now the tables have so turned that in the minds of some people, to even suggest that it's a disgraceful thing, that's a disgraceful thing. That's a shameful thing. So it's quite astounding how things have changed. But back in that time and in Israel, this was something that ought not to be done. So Hamor spoke with them, the father of Shechem. He said, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as wife and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourself in it." Then Shechem said to her father and her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give you. Ask me however much for the bride price and gift, and I will give them according to what you say to me, but give me the young woman as my wife." So the men of the land are extending an invitation to Jacob and to his family to just come and be part of us. Let's intermarry. Let's join together. The Canaanites were divided up into all the Hivites and the Jebusites. And these were the people that God had told Abraham years before, earlier in Genesis. He said the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet reached its height. That would come later. But they're suggesting to Jacob and his family that they just sort of all, you know, blend themselves together. This would have been to contaminate the holy people and derail the plan and the purpose of God in setting aside this people in order to bring the Messiah ultimately. So behind this suggestion, you can hear the voice of the devil by suggesting that they come and just all of them join together as one big family. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, but on this condition we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, his son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. So you see that there's obviously some real kind of a commitment here by Shechem in order to obtain this young woman. And just the little sort of added note here, he was more honorable than all the household of his father. So he was evidently somewhat of an honorable young man. And so Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city, and they spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us, therefore let us dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us. I don't know that I would have agreed with that, but look what happens. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and killed all of the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones, their wives, they took captive and they plundered even all that was in the house. Listen, then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and they will kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household." And they said back to their father, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" So there's a sharp division here between Jacob and his sons. What they did was absolutely wrong. And I think Jacob was absolutely right, because Shechem and Hamor were honorable in that they sought to make things right with Dinah. And Simeon and Levi took advantage of the situation and basically murdered these men. Now, as we're going to see as we carry on here, these are the men who are the patriarchs of the leaders of the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. And as we're going to see, they're far from godly men. In many ways, they were very evil in many ways. And we're going to see that come out more and more as we go. But we will also come to a point later on where we will see that there is a redemptive thing that happens with them. You know, we see again that the working out of God's plan in history, not everybody involved in that plan has always been the ideal person that they ought to have been. But that didn't thwart the plan of God. I think of the genealogy of Jesus that we have two genealogies, as you know, in the New Testament. We have a genealogy in Matthew and a genealogy in Luke. But in the genealogy of Jesus, interestingly, Rahab the harlot is mentioned. Bathsheba, the one with whom David had an adulterous affair, is mentioned. And, you know, inserting those names into the genealogy, it's a picture of God's grace upon sinful humanity. Jesus came to die for us because we're all sinners. And the sons of Jacob were sinful men, and we see their sinful character coming out here in this incident. Again, instead of humbling themselves before their father, they just simply are contending with Jacob. They're basically saying what we did was right. They should not have treated our sister that way. Then God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there." Now, Bethel was the place, remember, when Jacob had left Beersheba and was going to be with Laban. That is the place where he had stopped and the place where he had had the revelation of God. You remember, he lied down and he had that vision of the ladder and the angels of God ascending and descending on that. So the Lord is now directing him out of this area of Shechem, which would be in what would later become Samaria. And he's to go up into Bethel and he's to dwell there and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. Now, remember, Jacob has just said, "I'm obnoxious now to the Canaanites. They're going to attack us. They're going to destroy us." And immediately the Lord comes in and says, "No, Jacob, you go to Bethel, go back to that place and make an altar there." Go back to the place where I met you when you fled from your brother Esau. So the Lord's reminding him through this that just as God had protected him from Esau and kept him all of the while, he would continue to do that. And so Jacob said to his household, now listen to this, Jacob, the patriarch, the son of Isaac, he said to his household and to all who were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you, purify yourselves and change your garments. So we see there's even in the household of Jacob. Now, Jacob, of course, has these sons. He has the wives, the concubines. He has many servants. So all of them would be included in this. But there's still idolatry in the household of Jacob. And now Jacob is realizing that he can no longer be lax in regard to those things. These things have to be dealt with. So he basically just lays it down to his family. You need to put away the foreign gods that are among you, purify yourself, and change your garments. As we read through the Old Testament, of course, we read a lot about idolatry. We read a lot about foreign gods. We read a lot about the various images and things. And we know from the study of the history and the culture in that region that they worshiped a myriad of images, carved images. But it doesn't take a carved image to have idolatry. We often think that any references to idolatry or any exhortation to put away idolatry, it's sort of irrelevant to us. It doesn't really apply because, after all, we don't have any idols. But as we've heard many times before, the idol, the image, was just, you know, something tangible that a person could look at, a person could bow down to, but it was the image of a concept or an idea. And so we might not have the very images today, but we still have the same concepts. We still have the same ideas. In other words, as you have heard before and as you know, idolatry is still alive and well on planet Earth. Many people today are still worshiping images, actually. But even in the Western world, where we've been under modernistic ideas and the scientific era and all of that, there's still plenty of idolatry that goes on. It's just manifested in a different way. It's the worshiping of ideas and concepts and passions and those kinds of things. So it's possible to be an idolater but not realize it, because we're only thinking of idolatry in the sense of images. Oh, I don't have any images, I'm fine. But the fact of the matter is, my heart is passionate about some idea or some thing or some possession, something other than the Lord God himself. You see, when the Bible said that we were to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, the picture there is a picture of I've got no room to love anything else because all of my love is being directed toward the Lord. But whenever some of my love is taken and directed toward another thing, an unworthy thing, that's when an idolatrous situation develops. You see, when we're worshiping anything but the Lord, any other idea or whatever, it's always going to lead to problems in our lives. It's always going to lead to a diminishing of the blessing of God in my life. It's going to lead to the increase of chaos and misery and those kinds of things. So we ourselves today, we need to, you know, take an inventory and look at our own hearts and just ask some hard questions sometimes. You know, who am I really living for? Who am I really totally sold out to? Is it really the Lord? Or are there other things that have crept in? Are there other things that I'm really deep in my heart, these are the things that are driving me. The various gods, you know, that are mentioned in the Old Testament, we have, of course, Baal mentioned, we have Ashtoreth, we have Nebo is another god that is mentioned, Molech is another god that is mentioned. And there's a lot of difference of opinion as to just, you know, what they represented. But generally speaking, you could say, well, Nebo was actually the god of wisdom. A person who was worshiping Nebo was really worshiping wisdom or philosophy or the intellect. Baal and Molech, probably some crossover there with the worshiping of pleasure, prosperity. A lot of the focus had to do with the agricultural cycle and the prosperity that would come as a result of, you know, the harvesting and all of that sort of a thing. You know, the fruitfulness and all, the reproductive. So these weird sexual things would be connected with it, and then different ideas of prosperity and those kinds of things. And these are all of the things that we can easily get caught up in today. We can get caught up in worshiping the intellect or worshiping the philosophies of men. I think of so many people today that are basically bowing down to Nebo. They reject the word of God, they reject the revelation of God, and they worship at the altar of man's mind. And they worship according to the various philosophies. And what you see happening on the political level and on the level of cultural engineering or engineering within society, you know, trying to form a certain kind of society based on a model, you find that it all comes down to the ideas of different men who reject God and assert their ideas over the ideas of God. And a lot of people bowing down at these altars, a lot of people worshiping there. But then you've got just a lot of that, you know, the average person is worshiping at the altars of Baal, worshiping at the altars of Molech, worshiping at the altars of pleasure and prosperity and sexual gratification and some of those baser kinds of things. But we, as God's people, we have the command to put away the foreign gods that are among us. We're not to be part of that. We're not to be engaged in that. We're not to involve ourselves in those things. We're to be worshiping the Lord and serving Him only. And Jacob here is really being exhorted by the Lord to kind of get his house in order. I think that's the point that God is making with Jacob. He's been relatively lax in regard to his household. Remember, we saw when they were fleeing from Laban, Rachel had the household god. She had stolen them. Apparently, Jacob just sort of let all of this stuff slide. He just wasn't too diligent about dealing with these kinds of issues in his house. And now the Lord is saying, Jacob, go back to Bethel. Go back to the place I met you. Erect an altar there. And Jacob, from that, he comes now to his family and he says, put away the foreign gods. Jacob's doing the right thing here. He's taking the leadership that he had not really taken previously, and now he's saying, look, we're going to serve the Lord. And you know, don't wait for somebody else to do that. Take the lead yourself. And you know, a lot of times the best way to get other people to go in the right direction is to just start going in that direction yourself. You lead much of the time by example. It's really about showing people the direction by just going there yourself. And so Jacob here is taking the initiative. He's commanding his family to get their act together as well. I can't really control anybody else, but I can deal with the foreign gods in my own life. If I start there, that itself is going to impact a lot of other people. You have tremendous power to affect the lives of your children. But you've got to set the example. You've got to set the standard. Moving in a direction, you know, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to sit there and lecture your kids and to tell them all the things that they're supposed to be doing when you're not doing it yourself. They see through that. They realize that that's hypocrisy. So we've got to lead by example. But we've got to get our houses in order. So Jacob says, and let us arise and go up to Bethel. And I will make an altar there to God, who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone. So again, Jacob is, it's kind of like just a fresh commitment on Jacob's part. Go back to Bethel. Go back to that place. the house of the Lord, that place of communion with Him, and let Him renew you. Put the Lord back in the place that He belongs.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Genesis in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part two of Back to Bethel. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Back to Bethel. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT0045. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian, or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.